I'll show you how long these hazy conditions hang around. Plus, our chance for rain going up through the evening. I'll time it out hour by hour.
And our risk of more smoky days like today are going up. WREL's climate change reporter explains why. Then, four people killed and another person hospitalized in a crash so severe it detached both engines. What investigators say happened.
Let's take a live look at the radar right now behind us. Look at all that green. We got a lot of rain moving across the area and the chance for storms. We can't rule that out. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. And of course, we are also tracking a code orange air quality alert still in effect for our entire state. And it'll stick around through at least tomorrow.
Meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRL Severe Weather Center with how the rain will impact the haze. Much of an impact there, Kat?
Earlier in the day, it actually made it worse. It brought all that haze high up in the atmosphere down to the surface. But as the rain has continued, it's helped to wash some of it away. And the haze also just pushing to the east. So outside, we're still tracking some scattered showers around the area. A bit of a break from many areas around the triangle. Still a few showers, though, toward Apex, Cary, Sanford, Southern Pines starting to see some rain, and Fayetteville finally seeing rain. We'll continue to see these showers slowly moving to the south and east tonight, but the rain should remain fairly widespread through about 10 o'clock. It's not until midnight and later that the chance for rain will end in the triangle, and it clears out by early tomorrow morning. The smoke from the Canadian wildfires, we were in the oranges and the yellows earlier this morning, but we've seen the smoke lighten up since then. We're in the grays, which is light smoke for us, and that's where we expect to be tomorrow morning and during the afternoon and evening tomorrow. So there is still going to be a haze out there, and because of that, it's a code orange air quality day. I'll have a closer look at the extended air quality forecast into the weekend coming up.
We'll check back in. Thanks, Kat.
And several school districts limited outdoor activities or canceled them altogether because of the air quality. We are in a code orange now, as you know, but until this afternoon, many of us were under a code red alert. So despite this, we found some people still out and about today. A WakeMed doctor tells WRAL everyone should be taking precautions. The air quality can especially affect children.
Children are particularly vulnerable to this type of pollution, mostly because of their size. The airways that carry breath from our nose and our mouth down to our blood are just smaller on average. And so they're more affected by these tiny particles that are produced by wildfires.
If you have kiddos at home, he says you should watch out for symptoms like shortness of breath, congestion, and eye irritation. The state's air quality division says it's important to be aware even if you are healthy.
These topics are certainly not something we're used to right now. These blazes, of course, burning and the particles spreading across the United States well ahead of Canada's wildfire season. This is very early for them. It's part of a growing trend of longer and more severe wildfires across the continent. WRL climate change reporter Liz McLaughlin is here now live with some more on how the risk of these smoke waves and wildfires really changing for folks in our neck of the woods, Liz.
Dan, you know, when we talk about wildfires, you might only think of the western part of the country. But here in the east, we are seeing conditions that can make dangerous fires more likely. According to Climate Central, most of North Carolina has seen an increase in high-risk days in recent decades, now averaging 1 to 2 weeks each year with conditions prone to start and spread wildfires. And as we felt in the air today, with a code red alert for most of the day, fire dangers can float far beyond the flames. Wildfires in Canada have been raging on for more than a month, with smoke so widespread it's visible from the International Space Station, burning through swaths of land that amount to more than 5 million football fields.
Those were started by temperatures that were five times more likely due to climate change.
Canada's fire activity this year is near historic levels, fueled by dry weather, wind, and high temperatures, with the consequences of climate change spreading far beyond the blaze. As high-altitude winds of the jet stream carry smoke more than 1,000 miles from the fires.
Well, what we say in air quality is that the air travels sometimes vast distances across continents.
Officials with North Carolina's Division of Air Quality are warning residents to avoid outside activity due to dangerous particles in the smoke that can damage lungs and enter the bloodstream.
We are seeing an increase in the number of these sort of exceptional wildfire events that are imposing air quality concerns.
According to a recent UN report, wildfire seasons are expected to continue to get worse, trending over longer periods of time with a greater number of acres burned each year. Conditions that are becoming more common in the east as well, coupled with development in high-risk areas.
And so there's more potential for fires in this area to impact people, even though they might be smaller or rarer than the fires in the west.
So looking at the number of households in what's called the wildland-urban interface, areas most prone to wildfires, compared with increases in fire weather days in recent decades, North Carolina was ranked third by Climate Central, behind only Texas and California. In 1990, there were about 1.2 million homes in high-risk areas in our region. Now that number has nearly doubled.
Wow, a very interesting statistic there. Liz McLaughlin reporting live for us. Thanks, Liz.
I'm Mark Boyle in the WREL Live Center. New tonight at 7 o'clock, we're getting some more information about the death of Darrell Williams. And new right now is a statement from the attorney that represents his family, Ben Crump. On your screen, this is what it says. In part, despite officers knowing of his heart condition, they deployed a taser against him numerous times, showing a shocking disregard for his life. It continues to say, we will leave no stone unturned in pursuit of the truth, justice, and accountability. These statements in reaction to all of this, all due today to the medical examiner's report that came out. This death happened early in January. And in part of all of this, in the new details, it says that contributing factors to his death included cardiac arrest. He had cocaine in his system, according to the medical examiner, and weapon use. And that weapon use is the taser, of course, that RPD used when they came up on him on that parking lot in front of the sweepstakes store. We'll follow the story as the reaction continues to come in this afternoon. The investigation continues into this murder, into this death that happened several months ago. Back to you.
Okay, Mark, thank you. Tonight, we are pushing investigators with State Highway Patrol to find out what caused this deadly crash in Moore County. The visuals are striking. Sky 5 flew over the scene where state troopers say four people died. WRAL's Aaron Thomas is live in Moore County tonight. And Aaron, at last check, one person is still in the hospital?
Yeah, that's correct, actually. In fact, we are still waiting to hear from investigators about the condition of that person in the hospital, as well as the names of the three people who sadly were killed here on Highway 690, also known as Lobelia Road, headed towards McGill Road. I want you to take a look at your screen. You can see the two vehicles. We're talking about an SUV and a car, both badly damaged. You can see the severity of the impact from this crash. The force was so powerful that the engines of both cars were completely detached. Take a listen to the radio traffic from the first responders as they arrived to the scene.
Units en route, Lavinia Road, keep you on progress. I'm being advised four unconscious patients.
1014, 690 is going to be shut down for a while. You can let you know that. Detour now. McGill and McPherson.
And you can see here on your screen, Sky 5 showing you video of, again, of how horrific this crash was today for all involved. Tonight, I did speak with a former trauma nurse who says that she witnessed this all firsthand. She says it was the person, the driver in the car, who was actually going too fast in their car. They crossed the center lane and they hit the other vehicle head on. The driver of that car was killed, and the car that they hit had three other people inside, and all of them sadly died. Now, after speaking with several people out here today, they were saying how the speed limit is posted for 50 miles per hour, but there does often appear to be a issue with speeding. Of course, this is going to be a story we're going to be staying on top of for our late news. Ashley.
A sad story indeed. Thank you, Aaron.
A farmer is defending his decision to burn his fields by I-795 in Wilson County. This all happening just before a 24-car pileup on the interstate. Look at the video. This happened yesterday at the line between Wilson and Wayne counties. State troopers say the crash left 12 people with minor injuries. Witnesses are telling us that fields next to the interstate being burned cause a cloud of smoke to block visibility for drivers. Look at the picture here. One driver sent us this showing how thick the smoke was before the pileup.
And I've seen them do it around Wilson, but never that close to the highway, you know. And obviously not a lot of people are prepared for that.
WRL reached out to the farmer, wanted to hear what he had to say. He apparently had a permit to burn the fields yesterday and says he doesn't believe he's responsible for the wreck. We're waiting to hear back from state troopers, though, on whether they think he's responsible and could be held liable.
New details tonight about that deadly fire at an apartment complex in Charlotte. Charlotte's fire chief saying they discovered multiple accidental heat sources in an insulation foam trailer where the fire started. Firefighters rescued 15 people on May 18th after flames broke out at the apartment complex. Two workers were killed. The fire department now saying the building did not meet North Carolina fire code. Still ahead, a scary situation for a family camping in our state. A four-year-old bitten by a copperhead received more than 10 vials of anti-venom. How he's doing, plus.
It's never going to make any sense. I'm sure it didn't make sense to Kevin.
A Cary widow is pushing to get better care for people experiencing mental health emergencies after her husband recently took his own life. WRAL's Amanda Lamb has their story coming up. Every year, 47,000 people die by suicide in the United States. A Cary woman lost her husband to suicide in April.
She believes that emergency care for people in mental health crisis in North Carolina is broken. WRL's Amanda Lamb shares her tragic and powerful story.
When Kevin O'Donnell was memorialized at this church in Cary in April, it was after an illness. But not the type of illness you typically think of.
But more than anything else in the world, he loved his family.
Even that intense love couldn't heal him.
And I think every member of our family was obviously intensely worried about him.
Kevin, as long as I've known him, has had anxiety.
Sharon O'Donnell, Kevin's wife, was his rock.
Kevin and I were married for almost 35 years, and he was a wonderful husband. Father, we have three sons that are all grown.
Kevin was under the care of a psychiatrist and a psychologist and was on medication. But in December, he spiraled into a deep depression.
There was this sadness that just overcame him. There was just this heaviness that just hit him.
On February 28th, Sharon took Kevin to the emergency room at UNC Chapel Hill. There were no inpatient psychiatric beds available. So he remained in the psychiatric wing of the ER for 24 hours, waiting to be admitted.
When we first went into the ER, the place we went into was very depressing. It was gray walls, and gray doors, thick gray doors. It looked like a prison.
Sharon says there was no separation between patients.
But it just so happened that the person that was beside us was a patient who had violent tendencies. He was very aggressive.
At one point, Sharon thought about transferring her husband to another hospital where a bed was available. And she was told,
if we do make the transfer, a sheriff's deputy will have to come and put you in handcuffs. And my husband just sobbed when he heard that.
The North Carolina Sheriff's Association tells WRAL that handcuffing psychiatric patients during transfers is standard protocol to protect the officers.
So here we are talking about destigmatizing mental health. And in that instance, it seems like we are criminalizing mental health.
The couple chose to stay at UNC Chapel Hill. And once admitted to UNC, Sharon says her husband received excellent care and was released 4 days later in good spirits. But he relapsed in March.
So I said, why don't we go back to the ER? And Kevin said, no way, no way.
Kevin died by suicide on April 20th.
It's never going to make any sense. I'm sure it didn't make sense to Kevin.
We think this is really serious. We're in a crisis right now. We can't mess around. We need to move. And we're going as quickly as we can.
Dr. Patrick Sullivan heads the newly formed UNC Suicide Prevention Institute.
The rates of mental illness and untreated and serious mental illness are if they're not at an all-time high right now, they're pretty close.
Dr. Sullivan can't talk about specific cases, including Kevin's, but says healthcare funding cuts have disproportionately impacted psychiatric patients.
We haven't been funding healthcare well enough. There's been a lot of effort to save money, to save beds. Psychiatric services are kind of an easy target.
To this end, UNC Chapel Hill has doubled the number of psychiatric clinicians in the past 3.5 years. But even this is not enough.
If we can handle these in some other way without having to go to an emergency room, that's even better.
I'm incredibly proud to call him my dad for the rest of my life. if nothing else, he's no longer hurting, no longer in pain.
Sharon and her family are determined to keep talking until there are better services in place statewide to help people like Kevin.
We just need to fix it. We just need to fix it.
Amanda Lamb, WRAL News, Cary.
Stories like that can be discouraging. I know that. I know that there are people at home who are struggling. If you or anyone you know is suffering from anxiety or depression or having thoughts of suicide, you can find a full list of resources right here at home in our area. Just go to WRAL.com/get help. You can also, of course, reach out to the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by calling or texting 988.
We still have a long way to go with mental health. I hope Kevin's story can be of help and hope. A 4-year-old boy is recovering after a copperhead snake bit him during a camping trip in North Carolina. This is Jad, who suffered the venomous bite in the Highlands area just last week. The preschooler was outside a cabin playing on the porch when the snake struck. His parents rushed him to the ER, where he had to receive 10 vials of anti-venom treatment. Even after that, his swelling still wouldn't go down and had to be airlifted to another hospital. Doctors there treated him for 3 more days, but he is now back home in Tennessee. Fortunately, experts say you should seek medical attention the moment you realize you've been bitten by a snake.
What a cutie. Poor little guy. Hope he's doing much better. Let's take a live look outside. This is White Lake. It looks gorgeous. Just a peek of the sunset up there in the corner. That haze is still kind of hovering over the water there, making for some poor air quality as we've been talking about over the past few days. Meteorologist Kat Campbell joining us now with how things are going to progress as we move forward, Kat.
We've got more rain on the way this evening, and when you look up, you're going to see a mix between the clouds, the light rain, and the haze out there. So overall, mostly gray skies. We were able to find out one little peak of sunshine on the White Lake camera for you. In Durham, though, you can see it's a gray evening outside. We've got some more rain moving in from the west. In between these splotches of green on the dual Doppler 5000 radar, there are a few areas of very light mist out there, but we are going to continue to see these showers moving to the east. So even if it's not raining where you are right now, more rain is coming. And we can't rule out a rumble of thunder, but the severe weather threat has been dropped for our area. And meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner first told you it was dropped this morning, and we expected that to happen. It's mainly toward the coast where there could be a storm with some strong winds. Let's take a look at our weather setup that we have in place. The cold front right here, this is what's helping to spark the showers in the area. It will continue to push to the south, and once it clears the area overnight, we've got some drier air moving in behind it, very comfortable air. But I also want to point out the low pressure system that this cold front is attached to. It has a counterclockwise flow, and because of that, it's steering all that smoke into the area from Canada. So it's that upper level low that's really steering all the smoke into the area. The more dense smoke, of course, up to the north, New York City has seen it today. And here locally, we were in the oranges and the yellows earlier today, where we did see the thicker smoke in the morning hours. But throughout the day, we've gradually seen some of the more dense smoke pushed to the east, and that smoke continues to move east and offshore. So we expect to see lighter smoke moving forward tonight and into the day tomorrow, but it's not going to be a clear blue sky. There's still a haze out there. It's just not as dense, the smoke that we expect to see. The more dense plume of smoke likely to pass through Virginia late tomorrow night. So we'll continue to monitor that. Tomorrow and Friday, both code orange air quality days. That means if you're sensitive, if you've got heart and lung disease, try to limit your time outside. By Saturday, improving air quality, just code yellow, which is good news. The weekend looks pretty good. The next 3 days, temperatures are going to be warming up. We've got sunshine, dry weather expected, low temperatures, pretty comfortable in the mid-50s, and low humidity. Sunday even trending a little bit less humid, but still pretty hot, 89 degrees with a few hit or miss pop-up storms. It's summertime, so it's about time we start seeing some of those hit or miss storms. Monday, though, our best chance for rain. Hopefully that'll help your grass.
Thank you, Kat.
Dan, you know when it's election day, you go to the polls and you get those stickers, the I voted stickers?
I love that. I love getting the stickers.
Okay, well, they're about to get a whole lot more creative. Some children in our area created art that could be featured on your I voted sticker the next time you head to the polls. How you can actually vote for your favorite coming up.
It's been a long journey with a lot of turns. You know what? I wouldn't have bet on this one, but here we are.
There we go.
Online sports betting is just a signature away from being legal in North Carolina. This afternoon, state lawmakers gave the measure final approval, and the governor is expected to sign it. This, okay, would allow you to bet on professional and college sports on your phone, any tablet using a mobile app, also in 8 in-person locations. The State Lottery Commission will be in charge of all of this, and mobile betting would start as soon as January. Mm-hmm. Many breast cancer patients and survivors look forward to an annual gathering at the Duke Cancer Institute.
They call it Survivorship Day as they support and empower survivors and current patients. Participants enjoy panel discussions, workshops, and an array of support services. There's plenty of pampering, too. Mm-hmm. The focus is showing attendees how to live their best life during and after cancer treatment. I love that.
Me too.
One of the best parts about voting, aside from, democracy and whatever,
Right. Yeah.
It's getting those little I voted stickers.
Well, you get to walk around and be like, did you vote? I voted.
Exactly.
I'm doing the right thing. Well, next year, one of those stickers will be designed by a Wake County student. You're taking a look right now. Look closely because you're going to decide which one. There's about 100 students that submitted their designs, and these are the 10 finalists. Some drawn by high school seniors, other by sixth graders. And that one says, I voted squirrely, which
there's
something
one.
About that one. I love this one, too. I don't know why. I'm keen on kind of the quirky ones, but I like it. The winning design will show up on early voting stickers in next year's election. Voting is now open on Wake County's website for this, not for the elections, but for this, and they'll be staying open until June 21st.
I like the theme here, voting for the I voted sticker.
Yeah, right. Get you. What do they say? Grease the wheels a little bit for
exactly.
Actually voting on other
exactly.
stuff. But this is important as well. So good luck to all the kids. Why don't they just print them all?
I know they
print
should.
Them all.
Like stamps.
Come on.
You get your choice.
We'll find that in the budget. Thanks for joining us and making WRAL your choice for local news.
We'll see you at 10 and 11.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.